I'm pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for their drive to work. Okay. So the origin of today's podcast has a cute little story behind it. So I was on my blog the other day, and somebody was asking about how we design for different rarities. And I said, oh, I did a podcast series on this. So I made a link to designing for commons, and then made a link to designing for uncommons, and then I made a link for designing for rares, and then I went to make a link to designing for mythic rares, only to discover I never made it. So this is a series that I somehow didn't finish. So I will finish it today, many years later, as is my way, I guess, sometimes. I just didn't realize I didn't do it. Okay, so the idea for each of these podcasts is I'm approaching... The idea is each rarity has certain rules and certain function. And so today I'm going to talk about how do we design mythic rares? What's the goal of mythic rares? Why do we have mythic rares? I even will throw in some history of mythic rares just for a little added flavor. Okay, so let's start with that. The history of mythic rares. So Alpha comes out in 1993. Are there mythic rares? There are not. So when Richard first made Magic, there were three rarities. Alpha had common, uncommon, and rare. In fact, there wasn't even a land rarity yet. Lands were literally on the common, uncommon, and rare sheets. Later, lands would get on their own sheets, and technically, I mean, we call lands common, but they for those that really technically on the coalition, that lands are slightly different. Anyway, we made Magic for many years. So Magic was the very first trading card game, but there were others. Other people made trading card games. It was a popular category. And one of the things that we asked ourselves is, hey, now that, you know, whatever, it was many years later, you know, now that we've, now that there's many people making trading card games, you know, we were the first one, but let's look at everybody else and saying, hey, are they doing things we're not doing that we might want to consider doing? And one of the things we realized in doing the research of every other trading card game outside of Wizards was all of them did more than three rarities. One of the cool things about trading cards is the very concept that you can have layered rarities. And they had rarities that exceeded a single booster pack. What I mean by that is if you open a single booster pack, you are guaranteed to get a whole bunch of commons and a good number of uncommons and get a rare. But usually they have a rarity that was rarer than that. And so we decided after doing some research, I mean, the other thing that happened is what we called rare was a wide range of things. I think on one end it's like a one in 40 something. And on the other end it was one in 121. That was, Ice Age, for example, had 121 rares. So what we realized is what we were calling rare was a really wide range of things. So we said, okay, what if we just chop that up? What if we take the lower half and call that rare and the higher half and call it mythic rare? So the way it works on a sheet is, so when Alpha was made, getting to collation real quickly here, the way that we do rarity most of the time is that there are slots for rarity. These slots are common slots. These slots are uncommon slots. These slots are rare slots. And the way we do that is normally we have a sheet dedicated, sheet or more than one sheet, dedicated to that rarity. So the idea is, oh, we have these common sheets, we put them in the hopper, and then the common sheets drop from the common slots drop from the common sheets. When Magic first started, there were three sheets, a common, an uncommon, and a rare. As time has gone on and we've gotten more sophisticated, there's now more sheets per rarity than one. Only because if we only have one sheet, it's a lot easier to understand, especially in common and uncommon, the runs, right? Like in common, if there's only one sheet, once you see one card, you know what comes after it. So we do multiple sheets, especially at low rarities, to mix it up a little bit to make it a little more surprise for you. So it's not as easy to track what's going on. And to make it a little more of a, you know, to add some more randomization to the booster, a.k.a. Anyway, then we made the very first small set, Arabian Nights, and the Arabian Nights wasn't big enough to have three sheets, so we did a combined sheet. The uncommon sheet had what we call U1s, meaning things only appeared once on the uncommon sheet, and then it had like U3s and U4s, and we called the U1s rares. So we did do something with smaller amounts, So anyway, we had the technology of sort of combining things on sheets. So the idea of Mythic Rare was, on the rare sheet, mostly what happens is Mythic Rares and Rares go on the same sheet, the rare sheet. Oh, by the way, from a rule standpoint, because I had a, only unsets care about rarity mechanically, but we did make the ruling in on that Mythic Rare and Rare are both rare cards. Notice they have the word rare in them. So Rare Be Gone that destroys rares does destroy Mythic Rares as well as rares. Anyway, so there's a rare sheet. On the rare sheet, usually, every rare will appear two times on the sheet, and every Mythic Rare will appear one time on the sheet. Once again, we often do more than one sheet. Our sheets are usually 11 by 11 or 10 by 11. There's other sizes. So anyway, on the sheet, there's normally something like 121 or 110, and then we have to chop them up and then put them in their slots. So Mythic Rare, we decided we wanted to do a Mythic Rare. Other people were doing it. We'd gotten some notes. We do a lot of market research that the collectors felt that it was a little too easy to collect. Now, none of this is getting into Booster Fun, which is Booster Fun sort of has variant versions of things. And then those can become even rarer. But once again, we're talking about how rare something is that has a unique card mechanic on it. Booster Fun usually is just taking existing cards and giving a new frame to them or new art to them or something, but it's not changing what they are. Anyway, we made Mythic Rares. So Mythic Rares, there's two rares to every one Mythic Rare, so there's a 2-to-1 ratio. And in the drop ratio, I think it's roughly every 8 packs. Originally, it was every 8 packs. I think it's slightly more common than that now. But anyway, there's a slot that's a rare / Mythic Rare slot. Most of the time, it's a rare, something like 7 out of 8. Once again, when we started, it was 1 out of 8. I think we've gotten a little better now. And then, so you don't get a Mythic Rare every time. You get a Mythic Rare some of the time. Okay, so now we get into the nuts and bolts of making Mythics, designing Mythics. So first and foremost, you need to understand when you're making your rarity, what is the rarity for? Why do we have Mythic Rares? Commons are the backbone of the set. Commons are what make limited work. Commons are what communicate larger themes. Like, commons do a lot of structural things. Mythic Rares are the opposite end of the spectrum. You don't even get a Mythic. Like, you get, you know, I don't know, 9 or 10 commons every pack. You don't get a Mythic Rare every pack. So the Mythic Rare is not about communication. It's not about structure. Mythic Rare is about excitement. The idea is every once in a while, not every pack, but every once in a while, you're going to open a pack. It's going to have a Mythic Rare in it. And the idea of the Mythic Rare is to what I call sell the dream. That we want to make Mythic Rare something that's just very exciting to open. That the emotional response of opening one is a big part of what Mythic Rares are. That we want to say, hey, there's something that's really exciting. You don't get all the time, but it's the potential. It's the possibility. And now we want to make rares exciting. So rares are also made to be exciting. Obviously, you get one rare per pack. So it's not that we don't want rares to be exciting. We do. But Mythic Rares are like a step above that. For example, when we make, after every set, we have what we call the Mythic Rare Wall, where we put the Mythic Rares up on a wall at the office. And for like a week or 2 weeks, people just come by and comment on them. There's like sticky notes you can leave. And the idea is we just, as a team, and then we also do what's called a rare pull. Now, in the rare pull, both the rares and the Mythic Rares, are to everybody in the company who wants to participate, it's sent out, you get a grade everything, and then the teams can look at the grades. And a lot of people grading who work at Wizards haven't yet seen the set. This is the first time they've seen the set. So we get a lot of first impressions. But anyway, the idea of Mythic Rares, so before we get into how we design, just understand what Mythic Rares are for. Mythic Rares are there to be the sizzle, there to be the excitement. That you want people to want to open a Mythic Rare, and when they open Mythic Rare, it's an exciting moment. One of the things that's fun about opening booster packs is the randomized, right? That they're not, you know, you don't know what you're opening, and there's an excitement opening. We want it to be exciting. And there's multiple aspects of that. Obviously, the commons and uncommons and rares, and, you know, all add to this. But the cherry on top of the sundae, metaphorically, is the Mythic Rares. So when making Mythic Rares, one of the questions we have to ask ourselves, and the way I like to say it is there a dream? Is there, when you look at the card, can you imagine something happening that is just grandiose? It's not that it'll happen every game, as much as it can happen. There's the potential to happen. That it's something that you just, like, you look at the card and I think the players call it Magical Christmas Land. The idea is, in this card, in its best possible version, if everything goes right, you know, I want something to happen that is just, it's going to be a memorable moment. Okay, so now let's talk about sort of what fits that slot. What is that? So first and foremost, Planeswalkers. We introduced I was talking about the history. Let me finish my history lesson real quickly of Mythic Rares, then I'll get into Planeswalkers. So Mythic Rares first got introduced in Shards of Alara. And I remember when we made it, we decided we needed to have an expansion symbol for it. So the way it works is common has black, uncommon has silver, rare has gold. So we sort of, nothing, I mean, that kind of matches sort of, I mean, I guess it's black, not bronze, but sort of matches like the, you know, medals at the Olympics. So we wanted something that was really exciting, and we actually did a whole bunch of searching for different things. It needed to be a color that's not associated with magic, so we didn't want to use any of the five basic colors. I think we looked at, we had used purple on the time spiral sheet, so purple had already kind of filled a role. So we ended up with sort of a fighter orange that sort of had we tried a bunch of different things, but that was the thing that worked. So anyway, we added that. I forgot to mention that part. Okay, now get to Planeswalkers. Planeswalkers got introduced in Lorwyn. So they got introduced before Mythic Rares. In fact, Lorwyn, after Lorwyn was... What was after Lorwyn? After Lorwyn was Shards of Alara. So it was the year before. So 1 year before. So Planeswalkers, a little trivia question. The very first Planeswalkers were rare, only because Mythic Rare didn't exist. And the idea of Planeswalkers was you, the player, are a Planeswalker. Planeswalkers are the key, they're the mages in Magic that fight, that the game is built around. And the idea is if you're a Planeswalker, you can walk between worlds and you can collect magical spells from across the multiverse. And the idea is as we do different sets, it's like you exploring the multiverse. And now I'm in Duskmorn, I'm in Bloomburrow, I'm seeing all these different worlds and I can collect things from those worlds and learn the magic of those worlds and such. We decided, originally we were going to do it during Future Sight, on the Future Sheet. During the previous block, not Lorwyn, but Time Spiral block, we did this big story called The Mending, where we, Planeswalkers used to be kind of power level gods. It was a little hard to tell stories about. We depowered them a little bit. And then we decided that we should give them cards. If you want people to sort of really care about it. So we made a brand new card type called Planeswalkers. I combined elements. Garfield had made a mechanic called, what do they call them? For original Ravnica, they represented buildings. He didn't call them buildings, structures. I think he called them structures. I took some of the, it was an attackable permanent. So I took that idea. We spent a lot of time figuring out how to make Planeswalkers work. One of the early versions ended up being what we would later turn into sagas, where like turn one he does this, turn two he does that, turn three he does that, and then he would flip around and go to one. But the problem is the Planeswalkers didn't have agency, and so we moved away from that. But anyway, we ended up with a system where you get loyalty. The Planeswalker starts with a certain amount of loyalty and then has different abilities. So usually the way a Planeswalker works is the default Planeswalker has three abilities. We do have a frame for four abilities, and we have done double face cards where they can transform, so even more than that. The idea essentially is that the first ability is what we call a plus ability. This is the default. There's exceptions to this. The plus ability is something that the flavor is that you're asking the Planeswalker to do something that they like to do. And so it raises the loyalty. They're more likely to stick around. The flavor is that you're summoning this Planeswalker, and as long as it suits them, they'll stick around. So the idea of loyalty is, are you asking them to do things they want to do, or asking them to do things they don't want to do? The more you ask them things they don't want to do, the more likely they're to go away. the more you get them to do things you like, the more their loyalty builds. So the first ability usually is a plus ability. Normally it's a small plus ability traditionally. The idea you're getting one, maybe two loyalty, and then that's the way that you build up loyalty. And usually that effect is a smaller effect. Then there's a second ability, usually a small minus ability. That effect is a little bit bigger than the first ability. But you lose loyalty rather than gain loyalty. And so the idea is, it's something that we want you to do, but we want to limit kind of how many times you can do it. Usually that ability is doable as soon as you play the Planeswalker. So it is an ability you can do right now, but it sends you down a different path. Rather than building up your Planeswalker, you're building down your Planeswalker. How many times you can do that ability versus how often you need to build up is the big knobs for adjusting Planeswalkers. Sometimes they can do the negative ability once. Sometimes they can't even do it. You have to build up a little bit. Sometimes they can do it a lot because, you know, you come with a bunch of loyalty and it's minus one, so you can do it a bunch of turns. It depends on what you're trying to build up. The last ability is what we call the ultimate. Usually it's a high minus loyalty number. And the idea is we're going to let you do something pretty grandiose. We don't tend to write you win the game, but we do tend to write something that if you make it happen, your chances of winning the game go way up. That if you reach your ultimate, once again, it's not a guarantee you'll win the game. People have gotten their ultimate and lost, but it greatly, greatly increases. I don't know the numbers exactly, but if getting to your ultimate is like, you know, you have an 80% chance to win or something. Like, you have a very good chance of winning if you get your ultimate. Now, when we first introduced Planeswalkers, we didn't do this, but in War of the Spark, we introduced this. We can have static abilities on Planeswalkers. The static ability takes up space. So if you have a three sort of loyalty Planeswalker, or three ability Planeswalker, you'd have one static ability, then usually you'd have one plus the ultimate, or the static ability might be the way you get loyalty, and then you have a small minus and a big minus, depending on the static ability can do a bunch of different roles. We also have the ability, because we have a frame for four abilities, you can have a static ability and three abilities. Normally, it depends. I mean, we used to do, how many Planeswalkers we've done has varied over time. Right now, we're doing one per set. There was a point in time where we did 3 to 5 per set. It varies, and it's something that's kind of in flux. Planeswalkers, barring shenanigans like War of the Spark, or like we had one where we did Vertical Chandras, barring sort of shenanigans, normally Planeswalkers are at Mythic Rare, especially in the world in which there's one. Every card type is exciting, and we want you to do things, but because we do so few Planeswalkers, and because they're kind of iconic to our brand, if you will, we want to make them exciting. We want you to open up a Planeswalker and inherently be excited. Like, one of the things you should kind of learn is, if you're playing Limited, you open Planeswalker, you should really seriously consider playing that Planeswalker. You know, not always. Sometimes they're a little more niche for Limited. But, in general, a Planeswalker is something that is pretty powerful and is pretty sexy. And it's the one card type that we really mostly only do, with a few exceptions, at Mythic Rare. The other thing we tend to do at Mythic Rare is, we will have characters in the story. Not every character. Usually legendary creatures usually are rare, mythic rare. We sometimes do uncommons. We had a trend for a while where we were doing the signpost and uncommon is legendary. And we've kind of learned, like, we should do that infrequently. We were doing a little more than we should. In general, we sort of came to the realization, talking with the casual play design team, that we're making more legendary creatures than we need to. And so in Magic in-universe sets, what we inside the building call MIP sets, those we're going to try to go down on. The universe is beyond. The very nature of what we are doing is, hey, here's a popular property. Well, you know what people really, really like from popular property? Name characters. So the universe is beyond, still will do a decent amount of legendary creatures just because it's the nature of what the universe is beyond is. But we're trying in Magic in-universe sets to do less. Anyway, the idea is most of the time the legendary creatures are rare or mythic rare. We save kind of the most important ones for mythic rare. Either it's the, you know, one of the main characters, maybe the main antagonist, or maybe there's just a really splashy creature that we think we can do something really fun with. The idea when you're doing a legendary creature at mythic rare is we are always very conscious. I mean, we're conscious at rare as well, but we're more conscious at mythic rare about running through the casual play design team and saying, hey, are we maximizing this to be a potential commander? We want to make sure. I mean, we also do that with some rare legends, so it's not just the mythic rare. We do that with... We take a look at all the legendary creatures, but not every legendary creature is necessarily built with commander in mind, especially in Universes Beyond, where we make a lot more of them. But especially at mythic rare, we want the mythic rares to be exciting, so we want to make sure they're... The key to a mythic rare, especially a legendary creature, is you want to be doing something novel, or you want to be doing something in a way we haven't done before. Sometimes it's what we call turning the dial to 11. So that's a Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap reference. In it, it's a mock. So if you've never seen This is Spinal Tap, amazing film. Go see it. Rob Reiner's, I think, first film as a director. In it, it's a mockumentary, so it's a fake documentary about this band called Spinal Tap. Anyway, there's a great scene where they're talking to one of the members of the band, and he's talking about how he has his amp, I think, to turn up the sound. And his, instead of just going to 10, like every other amp, goes to 11. So he has a little extra something. That's what I refer to as going to 11. The idea is that when you're making a legendary creature, or any card really in Mythic Rare, there's a certain amount of novelty and or sort of wowness. Novelty is I'm doing something that we haven't done before, or I'm combining things I haven't combined before. I'm just doing something that you haven't been able to do before. The wowness is... sometimes I'm doing something you've seen before, but at a scale you've never seen before. Or, one of the things we like to do sometimes in Mythic Rares is just push boundaries. Yeah, we've done an effect X, but what is, like, X to 11? What is us taking that ability and really pushing it beyond something that's really sort of jaw-dropping? So when making legendary creatures at Mythic... They serve a story role, so you really want to sort of get across what the character is. And you, once again, remember, you want to have a dream that if I have this legendary creature out and I'm able to get him on the battlefield and I'm able to do his thing, like there's just this, the idea in sense. So real quickly, a concept that I've talked about before, I did an article on it called narrative equity. The idea of narrative equity is that storytelling has value to people. That there's something that the idea that I do something and I do things is so memorable that I then tell people about it is worth a lot to people. Stories are worth a lot to people. And the idea of narrative equity is when you're a designer, one of the things you want to be thinking about is, am I making something that will make stories? Now, when you're doing commons, there's things you want to happen on a frequency to set the larger tone of the set. But something that happens all the time kind of can't be like, hey, every time I play this format, this happens. Every time. Well, maybe you tell the story about how it always happens, but that's not really a story-forming thing. Maybe it does a good job of setting tone or maybe setting up the sort of feel that you have. It's neat that when I play this format, this always happens. It's fine, and that's why commons are there. But for narrative equity, what I'm talking about is I want something that happens that's grandiose. I want something to happen that, hey, it is not something that normally happens. It's not something that you... that's why I say you have a dream. For example, the story that I've told before... if you listen to my podcast, I've told the story before. There's a lot of magic stories that I repeat. I know that. I had to show off a card called Chameleon Colossus at Worlds. It was for the upcoming set. No one had seen it, so I played in this multiplayer game. And the idea, each one of us in this multiplayer game, we each were playing in a different game with different people. We had one card that no one had seen, and the goal was, hey, play it during your game and try to be splashy if you can. So anyway, it was a card that doubles its own power, and I ended up doing something like 2,000 and some damage, and I gained 55,000 life, and it just was this giant moment. And like that's what I'm saying is, that card had the potential to do that. That's the only time I ever have used the card to that crazy an extent. I mean, it was partly because I was in a multiplayer game and someone had a group hug deck and there was a lot of access to mana. And anyway, it's just this exciting thing happened. That's kind of the dream I'm talking about. That I want to make something that you, the player, want to make happen. Not that it'll always happen, but that there's the dream of it happening. And that idea is, when that happens, that's going to become a story that I get to tell. And maybe there's one particular time, because, once again, I've played Chameleon Colossus many times, and fun, exciting things have happened, but one will be the pinnacle moment, you know, and that's kind of what you remember. But that's kind of the idea for the Mythic Rares. You want to build into it this potential for greatness, this potential that people can... And so a lot of times we like very big effects on our Mythic Rares. There can be hoops. The hoop might just be large cost, but the hoop might also be, okay, I need to get this in play, and maybe it's even cheap, but then I have to accomplish something. The other thing about Mythic Rares is basically, as you go up in rarity, we allow a little bit more wordiness and a little bit more complexity. That doesn't mean Mythic Rares have to be wordy. It doesn't mean Mythic Rares have to be complex. They don't. There's a lot of very exciting things that are simple and straightforward. What I'm saying, though, is if you need the complexity or if you need the wordiness to do something grandiose, Mythic Rares is where you're able to do that. Mythic Rares is the place where you're allowed to have the wordiest cards, where you can have the most complex cards. And once again, it's not an obligation to do that. It's the freedom that if you need it to do what you're doing, that's the place you have the most freedom to use it. Now, we do all different types of card types at Mythic Rare. We do make instant sorceries. We make artifacts. We make enchantments. We even make lands. And battles, I guess. But the idea is that... when you're making a Mythic Rare, the idea is there has to be that dream built in. And usually if it's a permanent, there's something really exciting that permanent can do. Normally if it's a permanent, it could be expensive and just do it right away. Most of the instants and the sorceries that tend to be Mythic Rare are expensive. The Mythic Rares are, there's something, like, if you can cast this, something exciting is going to happen. Usually it means a Mythic Rare. It's a little more expensive. One of the things that we're careful of is... So how good a card is versus its mana cost is what we refer to as rate. How powerful it is. As you go up in rarity, we get a little more rate. You know, the more rare cards are, the more we're allowed to push things a little bit. And one of the big reasons there is things... The power level of limited is very different than the power level of constructed. And so commons and uncommons are set at limited. They're about limited. Where rare and mythic rares are more about constructed. And so you're sort of saying things for constructed. So because mythic rares are, there's the least amount of them, it's the place where we get the most adventuresome with rate. Rares and mythic rares aren't too far apart on rate. It's just a lot of times we have to do things in whole amounts of mana. And so sort of how much we can sort of push that mana varies a little bit. We do try in general, if the sole thing that's exciting about a card is rate, we try to put most of those at rare. Meaning we want Mythic Rare has and the reason for that is, we want a lot of good constructed cards that are rare, not just all Mythic Rare. And B, rate is not something that most people can read easily. Meaning that if a card... if this card costs 3 mana, it'd be good. But if it costs 2 mana, it'd be great. A lot of people can't... the 2 versus the 3, they can't tell the difference between that. That only the really top-tier players... Now, obviously, if a card is good, it'll get played. And, I mean, there's some amount of... If a card is good, the community will figure out it's good as a whole. And then people will realize that. But we want to be careful because the idea of a Mythic Rare is to be exciting. And so if the only thing about the card is the rate... That is exciting. That won't be exciting to a lot of people. So we have to be very careful there. And that usually... And once again, we have powerful Mythic Rares. But the idea is more that it's combined with something that really is cool. Now, as I explained in my designing rares, rares are more for build-arounds, more for... when we're trying to make more of a what we call a niche design. Meaning, oh, this is a weird Johnny build-around. And, you know, most players will go, I don't know what to do with this, but Johnny's going to get excited. Johnny and Jenny will get excited. Okay, that's more of a rare. Mythic rare, we try to make the card such that most players will be excited by it. It's doing something that most players can sort of get excited in, and that the things that are a little more narrow tend to be rare. That doesn't mean there can't be some hoops to jump through. There can be building constraints into a mythic rare, but it should be something that everyone's like, I really want to do that. And the hoops we're asking you to jump through usually are things that are more generally, decks in general can, I mean, you have to do it, but most decks can do it. Where rares are more like, hey, it's a narrow build around that's really pushing in a certain direction. You're making a very weird deck. That's much more of a rare thing that we'll do rather than a mythic rare. Mythic rare wants to, as much as we can, we want all mythic rares to be exciting to as many players as possible. Not every mythic rare is exciting to every player. We get that. And we do, much like any card, there is a target. There's somebody that we're aiming at. Usually there's like a primary target and a secondary target in mythic. But on some level, the tertiary target is everybody. Like, we want as many people to be as excited by mythic rares, because once again, the goal of a mythic rare is to produce excitement upon finding it and seeing it, and it's the kind of thing that we know people want to play with because it's so exciting. We are careful. We don't do a lot of lands at mythic rare. In general, we most are utility things. We put it uncommon, not uncommon, we put it rare. Like dual lands, for example, usually are rare. I mean, they're common limited dual lands, but like more dual lands, more aimed at constructed, those tend to sit in rare, not mythic rare. They tend to be at rare. Rare is more where we put utility things. And like I said, the key to designing mythic rare, the tricky part about it is when you're designing for rares and even uncommon to a certain extent, you get to be very specific in the audience for the card, right? Oh, this card is aimed at this player. Let's maximize it for this player. Other players cannot play that card, right? There's a lot of more focused individual design. Interestingly, commons and mythic rare actually share the sense of there has to be a little bit more universal. That in common, if a card is too niche, it messes up limited. Because if only one drafter wants it, that drafter will always have it. It makes their draft monotonous, and it tends to make it too strong. So at common and at mythic rare, interestingly, at the extremes, we want to be more general, meaning we want many people to want and use this card. Mythic rare is that at the excitement level, meaning rares excite people, but rares can get more narrow. Rares can be, well, I excite this player. Not every player, this player. Mythic rares want to excite, sort of generally excite everybody. And so a lot of designing mythic rares, like I said, is figuring out, is there some effects that we haven't done before that will be very exciting? Is there an effect we have done before, but we can push and do in a different context? Is there a way to sort of do a tweak on it that's just very interesting? You know, and a lot of what we do at mythic rare is every time we make a set, we do, what's called the Godbook study, which is, we show the cards to the audience and do market research, and they say what their favorite cards are. So we have a list of what the favorite cards are for every set. Through market research, we also have digital data. There's data we can get off the internet. There's a lot of places to get data. We know the cards that people like. So another thing when you're designing mythic rare cards is, sometimes they're brand new, exciting, new things you've never seen before. But sometimes it's like, oh, we've done something we know players like. We have data that players like it. Let's do the more grandiose version of that. And so sometimes building mythics is just taking things we know play into what people really enjoy and finding like the version that goes to 11, essentially. Anyway, guys, I apologize for the giant gap in time between designing for rares and designing for mythic rares. But I finally did it. So now the series is done until we invent a new rare. We're not inventing a new rarity. I'm joking. That was a joke. Okay, anyway, guys, I'm now at work, so we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. Okay, guys, I will see you next time. Bye-bye.